I guess we've had time, everyone, to look over the bills. So we have a few amendments ready to go. I know that. And Representative Anderson, do you have any concerns or suggestions or amendments?
Yeah, I do, Mr. Chair.
You do? You had time to think it over.
I did. And
okay.
I really do want to say, Mr. Chair, I do appreciate you giving us the opportunity to review the bill. And, you know, as you know, we had just gotten it the night before and at a late hour, and I was stuck in taxes. And I do appreciate you giving us the opportunity to go through this, talk to some folks back in our districts, and have an opportunity to make some adjustments if we can. And I think you have in your folder, hopefully, the A7 amendment. If you don't, is it?
I believe, all the amendments, so we'll just take them in order. And Representative Anderson, you know, you've been so nice to me as of late that just wanted to be nice back. And, you know, it's not easy for me sometimes to be nice, so. You know, I just
set to vote.
You know, if you grew up on a farm, it wouldn't be so hard.
I grew up in the second best place to the farm, right on the edge of a mine pit. We were farming minerals, so you could have a tractor. So go ahead. Which one is the A7? Is that yours?
Yep, I'll move the A7 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Anderson moves the A7 amendment, and we are on the workforce development bill. So, excuse me just a minute, Ms. Fine. We will take all the amendments that deal with workforce development first. Can you arrange it that way? Okay. Representative Anderson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, A7 amendment, what I'm doing in effect is removing the language that we have on here that redefines what is an employment misconduct and who qualifies for unemployment insurance benefits. And you heard in committee, we had a fun volley on what the term egregious means. I think, Mr. Chair, you said it means that it's really, really bad. And I just think at this point that we shouldn't be changing this definition. I don't think that when it comes to individuals that have been negligent and have done intentional bad deeds, that they should qualify for unemployment insurance benefits. And Mr. Chair, if we could, I know that we heard that day from the representative from the Chamber of Commerce on this issue, and in this job climate, I don't think that this is necessarily the route that we want to go in rewarding bad behavior. So, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion to for the A7 amendment.
Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would encourage folks to oppose the amendment. What we're trying to do here with the unemployment, with the employment misconduct definition, is to put it in statute the way it was intended to be under the current law. The current word there is, instead of egregious, is serious. And for whatever reason, unemployment law judges and, frankly, the Court of Appeals has ignored the word serious, so that any rule violation in your policy has effectively become a serious violation of the standards that an employee should be required to act under. Such that, you know, if you have a policy in your place that no chewing gum behind the service counter, and you come out and you tell your employee, hey, the policy is no chewing gum, that could be, in theory, a serious violation under the way it's being interpreted now. That wasn't the intent of the law that you guys all passed, I think, 4 or 5 years ago. The intent was to be that you had to be, you had to do something not just to get fired, which, you know, violating the rule, you should get fired if you're not following your employer rules, but also have the additional punishment of losing your benefits. And so I think this puts it back to where it should be, where it was intended to be a few years back when you put the word serious in there. And so I'd encourage a no vote.
Questions from the audience? Does Mr. Nelson want to comment or not? You want to stay out of this fight, Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
You don't even want to get involved. Okay.
Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, it'd be one thing if it were just dealing with the issue of egregious, but we're also deleting out of current statute the definition of employment misconduct of intentional, negligent, or indifferent conduct. And if somebody intentionally goes against what is involved in their work on a daily basis, that's a bad employee. And they shouldn't be qualifying for unemployment benefits if they intentionally do something that they know is not correct. And so I think that we are, and I don't think that that was perhaps Representative Obermiller's intent, but I don't think that that's something that we should be deleting out of current statute. Mr. Chair. No, I'll just leave it.
Okay. Further comments? If not, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? No. Motion does not prevail. Representative Anderson offers the following amendment. It is the eighth amendment, and pages, when you hand it out and everybody has a copy, why don't you just hand it out to anybody in the audience that wants one. Representative Anderson, the A8 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope that the farm boy, Mr. Representative Obermiller, doesn't think I'm picking on him, because these happen to be both of his sections in the bill. But what this amendment does is, this is dealing with the putting in statute the minimum salary for unemployment law judges. And members, that money comes out of our unemployment insurance benefits. And as we've been told multiple times, that fund currently is in the hole by a significant amount of money with no end in sight, it seems like. And what happens when we are in the hole in that fund, as you all know, is that we have to borrow from the feds. We have to increase the rates on our job providers in this state, and I'm concerned that this is the wrong time for putting something like this in statute. And I would rather see us not have this language in the bill, and so that's why I'm making this amendment.
Representative Obermiller, but before I call on you, I just do want to say, Representative Anderson, that I believe there were eight or so new, well, Mr. Nelson's kind of looking at me, but I think eight new judges or so hired recently, and so I hope you'll support the Obermiller language that on the conflict resolution, for lack of a better word, so a lot of these cases don't even get to an appeals or a judge, because hiring eight more, it's going to cost a lot more money than, or did cost, than giving them a little bump in salary. And with that, I'll just let Representative Obermiller talk about the salary of these folks and the need for the language.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Anderson, thanks for the discussion, because I think this kind of highlights an issue that, you know, all the different people who interact with these judges have had concerns on one side or the other. Some judges, they think this person really gets it and they understand and care about the issues. This one doesn't. And usually, depending on who you're talking to, it's the exact opposite judges. And one of the concerns we have and the reason for this language is not just to give more money to people who are there. You'll see that the language is tailored to new hires starting after July 1st of this year. The goal here would be to the pool of applicants who would apply for these jobs will be different based on the salary range that's there. And we want attorneys in these roles that are going to be the judges here who have the skill set to make sure they're making appropriate decisions and really paying attention to the law. The people who are there are doing good work. They're overworked now because we have too many appeals coming through them, which is what some of the other fixes do. But what this percentage essentially, or what this essentially does, is codify that their pay salary is going to be just in line with the other judges that we already have in statute that are in the same line. We have a set salary for district court judges. Workers' comp judges make a percentage of that salary. Administrative law judges make a separate percentage of the salary below that, and this just puts them next in line. It's kind of the way we handle, with the exception of this group, it's the way we handle judge pay. And I think as a policy decision, the reason to do it this way is we had a study done where the UI folks in last year's bill that made it through and was actually signed, I believe, by the governor, and then came back and we decided, as I can't remember what the organization is that does salaries and pay. I got to sit up here at the committee and they didn't like the fact that it was in the bill, and they, these are the numbers they had used, the 70, I believe the 55 and 75, and that was the appropriate pay scale for these folks. But they didn't like the fact that it hadn't been introduced as a bill separately. So we started the process over, essentially. One of our legislative committees didn't like it. And so we started the process over to put it in place. I think it's good policy to make sure we've got the, you know, good people who can actually do the right adjudication at this level, and so that's why it's in there. But I'd appreciate your support of it.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Obermiller, nothing prohibits these folks from receiving the salary now, but we're putting it in statute, making it mandatory, and we are going to be draining a fund that is funded by the job providers in this state. And so essentially what we're doing is making a guaranteed tax increase for those folks. And I just don't think that this is the right time in this economy to do this. So, members, I'd ask for your support of the amendment.
Well, Representative Anderson, I might point out to you that the workers' comp judges are funded by workers' compensation premiums, if I'm not mistaken, and that their salary is much higher than a UI judge, and this is 55 to 75% or whatever it says. So, you know, there's a lot of funding going on of the court system that's using, you know, that argument, the employer's money. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Representative Obermiller. Are there currently, the current hires, are they at a lower salary, and will we have an inequity as far as, you know, more recently hired people being at a higher salary than people that are currently doing the job?
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, that in fact, would likely happen as they hire new people, because the people who are there making, working now are not going to make, most likely do not make this amount, although there's some different salaries that are in the range. But again, what we're looking to do here is to try to, and I'm not trying to be disparaging the current folks, but we're trying to upgrade the next set of pool. What's happening now, we've got a lot of attorneys out of work, so the pool is pretty good, and we're hiring these new people we hired in, took a lower salary, but they're not likely to stay once they can return back to the kind of the private sector salaries that would exist out there for attorneys at kind of at this level and skill level. And the other piece is that the judges who come in, this is set up as the full-time equivalent, because a lot of these judges are, we want to be attorneys who have kind of got to the end of their practice and are coming back on a part-time basis. So they're kind of best equipped to be the judge. They've seen a lot of stuff and litigation. And so bringing them back in at, you know, half-time, but at this salary range makes it so they will come and join us rather than just going off into retirement.
Mr. Chair, I just... then a follow-up probably, is there any, you know, I'm just concerned about any unintended consequences here of doing this and then having people who, you know, will be at the lower salary, and I just the potential for them coming forward and saying they want to be able to, you know, increase their salaries, and, you know, this kind of speaks to the issue of how much money is in the pool to be able to pay people. So I just, again, ask that question if you have any further comments about it.
I would, Mr. Chair. You know, I do recognize where the funds are coming from, and that's a concern for me, too. But getting good adjudications so that you're not paying, I mean, good judges will help us to make sure that the decisions are right, that only people who are really qualified for unemployment benefits get it. So I think this actually is a pro-business provision to put right good judges there. I suppose it's possible that that deed will decide that there is someone who, you know, if someone came forward and said, I need more money or I'm gone, and if they are a rock star judge, deed could adjust their salary according to that if they wanted to do that. But again, that would only help us increase the pool and make sure we're keeping the kind of the really qualified judges in there and folks that are not on that level but are doing an okay job but aren't, you know, aren't the rock stars would ultimately be weeded out over the course of time.
I like that. Rockstar judge. Okay, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Oh, no. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion does not prevail. I lost my head for a minute. I was thinking of rockstar judges.
Yeah.
Representative Obermiller offers the following amendment. It's in the A-12 amendment. Representative Obermiller, this deals with an effective date of October 3rd.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The changes here, the first one is the effective date. We just missed that. It basically puts a sunset on the provisions that we have.
line 12. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Oh,
sorry, for the telephone benefit assistance, we have a benefit specialist that's going to kind of be the second set of eyes. It says we're going to try that for a couple of years. It starts October 3rd. That's a Sunday because they have to have time to kind of build the system in to make it work for the phone system, and then expires a couple years later. Make sure it's working. We have time to revisit it if it's not. And then the second one on 1.8 of this amendment, A12, clarifies the definition of what's suitable. I'm sorry. That's what we got.
So I'm not looking at this amendment lining up that I have the A12 with the...
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, because of the way the committee has proceeded the last 2 days, this amendment is amending language you've already adopted as amendments to the bill. So that's why it's presented this way. So to make the page and lines agree, you have to look at the A2 amendment, which you adopted yesterday, and the A4 amendment, which you adopted yesterday.
I've got to go back to that. So can we, the A2 and the A4. I got the A4, and there's the A2.
Okay. Mr. Chair, the A2 amendment was the telephone assistance language.
I see that, and I've got that in front of me, and now it lines up then. Line 12. Okay. Go ahead, Representative. Sorry, Representative.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry that was confusing. It's kind of a unique drafting thing. So, and then the second part of this A12 amendment is to the A4 amendment, which was the issue that dealt with the staffing services. And what we've done is clarify there in the definition where we're talking about suitable employment, that it's when it says the employment is with the staffing service and less than 75% of the wage credits, you know, that's how you fall into that category. What this says is it carves out the people who actually work for the staffing agency as opposed to the people who work for the staffing agency's clients. And so the only people we're worried about kind of trapping into the five-day rule are people who are essentially the product of the staffing service. So it's, you know, if you go out and work at Medtronic as opposed to you actually work for Dolphin Staffing, we don't want to catch those people in, or they don't have to be in that same category because they are working full-time for the actual company as opposed to they're the clients of the company. So, and again, that's an attempt to further make it a little easier on the staffing agency, more compromise on my part. So.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize, Representative O'Miller. I wasn't catching everything that you were saying because I was looking for that amendment, and I had the wrong A4 amendment in my packet, and I just found it here. So what you're saying is this is the language that you've worked out with the staffing folks, and there's peace in the valley. They're okay with it now? Or?
I don't think I heard him say that exactly, okay. But go. I think that they'll like it a little better.
No, Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Anderson. We do not yet have full consensus on this, although I am still committed, and I've said publicly to them, and I'll say here again, to keep working on the language to find a way to make it more palatable. But what this would essentially do is the original language in the A4 amendment that we adopted yesterday meant that if you were someone who actually worked for the staffing agency as opposed to work for the staffing agency's client, you know, you weren't someone who was sent out on temporary job assignments, this would have applied to you. And what this would say is only the people who are being sent out on the actual temporary job assignments fall into this. Now, what will be an exception to the discharge rule.
So, Representative Anderson, I don't know if we have peace yet, but I think we have a ceasefire in the valley right now. So, and I see there's a gentleman waiting to, if you want to come down, sir, Representative Mahoney.
Well, my only thought was that is this the Lee Nelson Full Employment Act?
Mr. Chair, actually, the benefit to this change and the changes I'm trying to make here is really going to take a lot of pressure off of the UI folks because there are a lot of appeals that deal with the five-day rule and these provisions. And actually, the interaction, I know the staffing agencies actually keep lists of all the judges and how they rule on these issues because this is a very important issue to them. And I think this is going to lighten their load. They don't like some pieces of it because it costs some money. It may cost some money. But in the end, I think they're going to be happy with a lot less interaction with DEED.
Sit down, sir, and go ahead, give your name. And
good morning. My name is Dwayne Hendrickson, and I am with a company called Masterson Personnel. I'm here today representing the staffing industry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for allowing me to give my input. Things are changing and out there, and over 2 million people get up in the United States every morning and go to work for a staffing service, and 100% of them do so because they choose to do that. 34% of the people who go to work each day for a staffing service actually choose to work directly for that staffing service rather than a traditional employer. And that number is growing every year. As we enter a knowledge-based society, this is our industry will only become more and more important to the Minnesota economy. 64% of the 2 million plus people that get up and go to work for a staffing service every day end up working directly for our clients, so they're transitioning into jobs. The staffing industry provides flexibility.
Sir, could you talk to the amendment itself, because we
patient, because I am going to address the exact lines of the amendment, okay. But it's so important that we see a big picture on what's happening, and that's one thing I love about state government and being able to come take my time from work to come down here and help understand from another perspective. I will bring.
Sir, I will try to be kind and lenient, and I gave you 20 minutes the last time you were here to discuss or more, in which you were the only one that got that type of time. So it's not as if I've been trying to censor anything you say, but we
thank
should
you, Chairman,
talk
and that
to
was
the amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. That was for a completely different issue. I'm going to bring everyone's attention to lines section 2, lines 29 and 30. And the A4 amendment, and I'm going to hand out our position on that amendment. Those changes would end up costing our companies big time, almost $1 million for my company alone, at a time when we're already laying off people, at a time when we're already closing offices. These are not small changes, and I have not had a chance, nor has anyone from my industry had a chance to address this committee on these particular changes. The last time I was here, it was completely something different. I'm going to hand out this, if I can. This is our position. The staffing industry provides the flexibility that Minnesota needs to compete in a global economy. We can't afford to lose another manufacturing facility to Mexico. We can't afford to lose another call center to Canada or to the Philippines. And we can't afford to lose programming and engineering jobs to India and China and Russia. We cannot continue to increase. This is an industry that employs over 200,000 Minnesotans each year. And we cannot continue. This amendment unfairly and unjustly targets an industry that employs over 200,000 Minnesotans every day. The UI Advisory Council is made up of labor, and it's made up of business, and it's made up of deed. And the idea is so that they can discuss these things and talk about these things and come to resolution. That process is not taking place here. The advisory committee has not had a chance to discuss these things. And so what I'm asking is that the lines, section 2, lines 29 and 30, be removed for further discussion. What I'm asking is that we believe it's unfair to say that employment is not suitable when less than 75% of their wages are earned working for a staffing service. It's targeting our industry. It's 90% of companies in Minnesota use our services. And so we'll end up closing more offices, laying off more employees, raising our prices, and the cost for doing business in Minnesota will continue to increase. When we have things in place, there are already some amendments in place that deal with suitability. There are already statutes in place that deal with whether the assignment was temporary or permanent. There are already statutes in place that deal with what Representative Obermueller is proposing. And I've had a chance to meet with Representative Obermueller, and I know that his heart is in a good place. I know that. He's not trying to get the staffing industry or to get someone. He's got a good heart. I just don't think that all of these decisions have serious repercussions, and we need to try to talk about them and have time, and they can't be brought up and become law in a hurry-up offense manner. So thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Questions of Mr. Hendrickson? Representative Obermueller, then, any more comments, or are we ready to vote? Okay, the Obermueller amendment in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Mahoney offers the following amendment, the A13 amendment, to the delete everything. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and committee members, DEET has come forth with some information that because of federal reorganization of their workforce funding source makes the amendment that I put on, which established a 10-member executive committee to serve as a management committee for the council, hard to do. And this particular amendment removes that language from the bill.
Okay, you're basically removing all the language.
Well, not all, but quite a bit.
You're leaving?
Leaving the providing the Commissioner of Employment.
Okay. Right. Everyone understands that, and that is the word you got from Ms. Batsley?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll represent Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question just on lines 11.25 and 11.26. Does that change that at all? If there's not a 10-member executive committee to serve as the management committee, is there any change or not? Because there currently isn't.
Poppy, I think you're correct.
I don't know.
Call on staff to take a look at it, but I think Representative Poppy is correct and probably need to take out on 25 and 26.
I think Ms. Elsie commented on this yesterday. Ms. Elsie, do you want to come up and Ms. Newman, do you want to answer Representative Mahoney as she comes up?
Mr. Chair and members, unless Ms. Elsie has something more substantive to offer to this, I don't think that you would hurt anything by taking that new language out on lines 25 and 26.
Ms. Elsie.
Yes, Representative Rukavina, members of the committee. I did contact the regional office of the Department of Labor yesterday about these amendments, and they said any amendments to the original language, since we grandfathered in our state council and did not change it, it is not mirror the federal statute right now, and we grandfathered it in, any changes we make to it would then delete the grandfathering provision, and we would have to reconstitute the entire council according to the federal statute.
And what would that entail?
That would entail a lot of work. The federal statute requires the majority of the members on the Governor's Workforce Development Board be business representatives. Right now, we have equal business.
Okay, that's enough for me. Let's vote. All those in favor?
Well, Mr. Chair.
And we'll delete that language then.
I want to ask staff and Ms. Elsie, on line 11, page 11, line 25 and 26, where it says, and serves as a management committee to the council. I guess I'm going to go to staff because I think that that actually doesn't work unless 13, 14, and 15 are in there.
That's what she said. We're going to move it. Remove it.
We are going to remove that.
Yeah.
So I will amend my amendment.
You'll just incorporate that. We
incorporate that in.
Delete the language on 1125 and 1126. Representative Mahoney incorporates that into his A13 amendment, and so we will then vote on the amendment as incorporated. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? That motion prevails. Representative Mahoney offers the A11 amendment. Representative Mahoney, study of Division of General Fund Revenue Account.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this came out of a bill I carried earlier that asked the department, Minnesota Management and Budget Office, to use community banks more often. For a variety of reasons that would only get me in trouble if I explained too deeply, but just to say that it didn't move in the Senate for some reason, that bill has been laid off to the side. What this amendment does is ask the Carlson School of Management to study ways that the state's finances could be spread across more avenues. And hopefully we can do this and come back next year with a few ideas on how to get our community banks to get more assets in the smaller communities.
Representative Clark. Representative Poppy, did you have a question?
I do have a question about this.
Okay. Excuse me, Representative Clark. Well, I saw Representative Clark's hand up, but
that's
Representative
fine.
Poppy. Okay, go ahead, Representative Clark. I'm trying to be polite.
It sounds like a good idea. I just have a question. Does the section that's quoted include credit unions as well as banks?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I'm expecting it to include credit unions, yes.
The language we had also did.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Any questions, Representative Anderson?
Excuse me,
Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering about...
I should, I'm always looking to my left. I should be, today I've been looking to my right, so...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if the Carlson School of Management and the University of Minnesota have been are agreeable to doing this study. If you,
I think they are, and I know that I talked to Ms. Peterson earlier, and because I knew that this question might come up. And Ms. Peterson, are you okay with this? We know they're a bright bunch. I think they can handle it. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I think the last time that we heard this in committee, we also talked about that the current funds go to our State Board of Investment, and then that money is invested. And I just, can you remind me again what the cost or the fiscal impact might be to the state on this as well? And is that included as part of this study?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, there that bill that you're talking about has been laid off to the side and is not moving forward. The fiscal note on that particular bill was $2,000 this year, maybe six or eight, because I don't have that number in front of me. Next year, a total about $20,000 over 3 years was the cost of that bill.
Well, we don't know.
So, I mean... The cost of the Carlson School of Business, I'm assuming they're good. Their decision to find goodwill with this committee will probably keep the cost down.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Representative Mahoney, but what I'm getting at is not the cost of actually doing this study or any of that. What I'm looking at is I believe that the money goes to the State Board of Investment, and they invest those funds as well, and that of course has an impact over their overall portfolio, I believe.
and I don't remember off the top of my head what their response was to something like this, and what, if any, of the fiscal impact would be on the state. And all I'm asking or suggesting is maybe in part of this study that we have this Carlson School of Management look at that component as well. And hopefully you're amenable to that as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I'm not as nice as the chair is, and I probably wouldn't be amenable to that. Because I think what you'd find is that the State Board of Investment sweeps all that money into its hands, or into its board, and then invests it on the East Coast and West Coast and kind of flies over Minnesota. And I frankly don't really want to embarrass the Board of State Board of Investment.
There you
Thank
go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now I know.
How will this farm girl answer that one?
Obviously, he didn't grow up on a farm, that's for sure.
He did too.
I spent my summers on the farm.
Yes.
That doesn't count.
Listen, he's been milking things around here for years, so. I understand, though, we have a problem because of a reference you have on line 1.8, so is it Ms. Newman or Ms. Novak that is going to? Ms. Newman is going to correct your amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, with some indulgence, I would suggest that on line 8 of the amendment, we strike, as defined in Minnesota Statute Section 16A.27, comma, and on line 9, we strike Subdivision 7, comma, and then on page 1 of the amendment, after line 12, we would insert the following language. As used in this section, community financial institution means a federally insured bank or credit union, chartered as a bank or credit union, by the state of Minnesota or the United States, that is headquartered in Minnesota, and that has no more than $2,500,000,000 in assets. And this is language that I read to you is contained in the higher ed
policy
finance bill.
Excuse me. Those were the 8 pilot program members that we asked Minsky to look at to try to do the same thing Representative Mahoney wants it expanded to be looked at or studied to do that. And if you don't, Representative Mahoney, mind that language, that was where we were.
The only change I would make is $10 billion rather than 2.5, because $10 billion is the federal limit for a small bank. So then you're matching up the federal numbers, and it makes it simpler.
Well, maybe I can, what I'm trying to not do is,
you want to keep it at 2.5, but I'm just saying 10 makes it simpler for.
I think even at 2.5, covers some banks that would meet that definition, except that are really, really big banks that do business all over, besides that we weren't intending with this.
Mr. Chair and committee members, there are no community banks or credit unions that exceed the $3 billion in assets that we should be worried about. You care to keep it at 2.5, that's fine. I was just trying to make it simple with the $10 billion, and if you want to stay at 2.5, I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chair.
Good. Representative Eastland. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Oh, it didn't sound like a farm vote to me. Motion prevails. Representative Rukavina has an amendment. Members, this is the language we had in the workforce portion of our finance bill that dealt with that $10 million that was left in the 21st Century Fund for a wind blade manufacturing facility, and we put it in the other bill, and it's just doing that in here, because I don't know if that language is going to stay in the finance bill, because the conference committee is saying they're pulling out a number of policy things, but that did deal with $10 million, so I thought it should stay in, but I'm just making sure it's in another place. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye opposed? Motion prevails. Are there any more amendments to come before the committee? Representative Mahoney.
Well, I don't know about other committee, other amendments, but I have questions about if the finance, the cut bill, is going to be pulling all policy language out that doesn't have anything to do with finance. I think I put an amendment on for a $4.50 charge for permits for a year. Is that going to stay in, or do you, have you heard anything
from that? My understanding is that addresses money, so it should stay in the bill, and I think it's kind of needed to balance things. So I think that will stay in there.
Okay.
Members, are there? Is there anybody in the audience that hasn't talked about? We're going to move this bill first. Anyone in the audience that wants to talk on this bill that for or against that I haven't given the opportunity to? Nobody? If not, then members, we have House file now. The 2781 delete all amendment, the DE1 amendment as amended in front of us. All those in favor? Are there any more discussion? Representative Ornes.
Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to state that I'm disappointed that we did not heed the testimony that apparently could have helped the temporary businesses in Minnesota. I guess that's what this bill should be about, is creating some jobs, and it seems like we're hurting some jobs, and so for that reason, I can't vote for it.
Representative Nornes, I think Representative Overmuller has, you know, tried to address a problem that's out there where we had heard he and I and several other members from some folks that represent some very poor people. Low wage earners that kind of get locked into the temporary job system. And he has been trying to work diligently to correct that since, I believe that was last fall, Representative. Maybe it was late summer even. It's been, I've lost track of months and days and here recently. By the way, did I tell you everybody that my daughter's getting married this weekend? I almost forgot about that. So, but anyway, I'm ready to leave here, and I thought maybe you could just give me a gift.
I didn't get an invitation, so I can't even give you a gift.
We had a quota of Republicans, and it wasn't that big of a percentage, so because I don't know that many. So, Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, congratulations. I think a wonderful thing that your daughter's going through, and I hope her father... His father-in-law treats your daughter him as well as my father-in-law treated me.
I had a wonderful father-in-law, too. And my soon-to-be son-in-law is a great guy. Listen, he's active in his union. He's active in the DFL. He loves my daughter. What more could a guy ask for?
I have a sense. My daughter's going with a guy that's a good, strong Republican. He plays golf and loves the fish.
Does he love it?
You're done. But getting back to this bill,
you had a quota too, and you used it up, Representative Gunther. Go ahead.
I'm sure I'm one of the Republicans going to be invited, but anyway, this bill does not create any jobs, and it's not the fault of this committee necessarily. The committee was dealt kind of a raw hand. We have nothing to work with. However, there are some things we could have done that I think we should have done. Representative Mahoney kind of nibbled around the edges quite a bit, and we can create a better place for employers to want to come to Minnesota by creating a level playing field for employers and have them, you know, work comp is a big issue with you, and it is probably for another reason for me. We are 40% higher than Wisconsin, 47% higher than Iowa, 66% higher than South Dakota. It's a barrier to growth. I think we could have focused on addressing those barriers to growth for employers to come out and hire more people, start their businesses in Minnesota, I think that we could have gone a long way to eliminate those barriers, especially without any money. That's all we really had to do. So if we want to have jobs in the future, we have to create a better and more friendly playing field for people that want to move to Minnesota and create more jobs. And that should be our focus for the next session. And I'm certainly going to make it mine.
And Representative Gunther, thank you very much. And you're right that we don't have a lot to work with here, and you know, being a former chair, where a lot of the cuts, general fund cuts, happened in your committee to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. But, you know, we also have a unique committee here because the other half of this committee deals with education and higher education, and we're cutting that. And the only time this state has jumped ahead, if you look at history, is when we had an income tax created that helped fund our K-12 schools, when we've done things that helped our higher education system, when we had the Minnesota miracle and jumped ahead again, and it's then an investment in education. And I think we have a wonderful state where disproportionate numbers of Fortune 500 companies are located here and don't seem to complain about our work environment. What they're worried about is our educational environment, and we're not meeting that, and that worries me more. And Representative Gunther, I don't know of anybody that came forward with a workers' comp revamping bill that that asked me for a hearing. I didn't see any. They weren't referred here. Okay. I just had Mr. Commissioner Swiggum yesterday in Senator Tomasoni's office talking about some concerns in the bill, in the other bill and this one. And he bragged to me that I believe, is there anyone here from Deed? Ms. Rakowski? Dolly. That they got an award for one of the top four workers' comp systems in the country. And maybe not, you know, for the cost of it, but certainly the efficiency in running it. And so, you know, it was an issue a long time ago. I haven't heard from many of my employers at all complaints about workers' comp premiums anymore. And if I had my way, since you compared it to South Dakota, I'd do the North Dakota plan where the state sells workers' comp insurance, since it's required of every employer. Mm-hmm. And a state bank. Hey, there you go. But anyway, Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. I was going to say Mr. Speaker, or Governor, or whatever you want to be called, I guess. you know, I guess I'd just like to make...
About Dad. Okay. This weekend.
Okay. And by the way, you know, if all that you seem to believe about Republicans is true, you probably should have invited more. You might have got bigger gifts.
No. Hey, listen, you guys still got your confirmation money. That's why you're Republicans.
No, I guess what I was just going to comment on, you know, if coming from a more rural community, and you are too, Representative Rukavina, but I guess this a lot of this licensing stuff in here just really runs against what I think we're about here this session, which is trying to keep people employed, you know. And there's a lot of people that are scraping around in rural Minnesota trying to figure out some way to make a living, and there's a lot of people that are doing home repairs and still hanging out a shingle to do anything, and we're actually putting more and more and more obstacles in front of these people to try to do things. You hire somebody to come over and put some siding on your house, and they in the context they break off the your frost spigot on the outside, and all of a sudden you have to have a plumbing contractor come back to put it on. It's like we're working against ourselves in some of this stuff, and I guess I just see that, especially this year, we ought to be doing things that are encouraging people to work however they can, and I think some of this stuff is sort of just moving in the wrong direction.
Representative Eastland, first of all, let me say this. I want to thank you for your, I think, about a decade of service, if I'm not mistaken. And your announcement yesterday, it's going to be sad to see you go, because you're a pretty good guy for a Republican. you are a good guy, and you've contributed a lot, especially your common sense on a lot of these licensing issues, in fact. This wasn't our language. Representative Obermueller got the language from Commissioner Swiggum.
I understand.
And who asked it.
I still disagree.
For a number of reasons. So we accommodated the executive branch's request. So, and I do share your concerns. Believe me, the libertarian in me doesn't like doing some of this stuff. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you, and I hopefully we can get to a vote, but I did, before we leave today, I wanted to thank Representative Eastland. I've served on this committee with him for a very long time. This will be his, I suspect, his last committee meeting in this particular committee, and we've worked on a couple of issues together. He's always been a good guy to work with, and I appreciate your service. And I think it's been longer than a decade, maybe a decade on this committee, but
so, with that, let's give him. Come on. And you know you can still give a gift even though you're not invited. So now we're going to move the higher education portion. Oh, we didn't vote yet. All those in favor then of the bill as amended signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Oh, motion prevails. Members, thank you. Moving on then to the higher education bill, which I got to find here. I know, but I'm looking for mine because they had marked it up a little bit. Representative
Rucavina.
I have an amendment, members, the A6 amendment to the DE3 higher education amendment, and this is putting Section 27 puts in this bill the pilot projects again that were in the finance bill on page 3, that is. On page 2, we were worried that some of that language might get pulled out of the, so that's Representative Poppe's bill, and on page 1, Representative Poppe's bill that was in the finance bill. So basically, this was all discussed here in that we put in the finance bill that we thought we, you know, had something to do with money and streamlining and everything else, but we're nervous that it might get pulled out of the finance bill. And so basically, that's what this does. Are there any questions on it, Representative Poppe? Do you have any comments on your portions of it at all?
Is it my portion or Representative Haas' portion?
Is that credit transfer? Right. That's Representative.
I think credit added transfer. His language back in.
Yours is
here.
Okay, Representative Haas' language then.
I understand correctly.
And so that's basically the amendment, members. All those in favor then, Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just looking at the amendment here, and I'm seeing on page 3 that it's talking about the pilot project. That was Mahoney's bill, right?
No.
Oh, is this different?
This was in the finance bill. This was language I had in the higher ed portion of the finance bill that talked about this. So this is exactly what we had in the finance bill that went out of here. And it's minuscule only, whereas Representative Mahoney's was having the Carlson School look at what he had been suggested in it.
This
bill was statewide.
Mr. Chair, my bill was statewide MMB. Your bill was a pilot project for Minsky Systems. So this is not my language at all.
This was the language I had. You already voted on this or maybe didn't vote on
it. It's a smaller version of my bill.
Yes. But when we had hearings and the jobs committee, Representative Anderson, one of the suggestions from small bankers, and I see their representative is up in the audience, was to try to keep some of that money locally in the community so it could be loaned out to small business people and Main Street businesses, and this is kind of a pilot way of looking at it. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, how does this work? Say, you know, St. Cloud State, they're going to invest their money, and there's, well, I'm sure Representative Haas can tell me, there's probably over 10 banks in that city alone. How do they choose which bank they're going to invest their money in?
We're giving the Board of Trustees the, I think the language says, the Board of Trustees is going to, you know, look at, Representative Mahoney.
Most banking services are put out on an RFP, and there's a charge for the, they charge a fee for handling the money. So if Bank A puts a response to the RFP at $100,000 for that dollar figure, and Bank B puts a $110,000 bid in, Bank A typically gets it. So it's a bidding process, and whether there's 10 banks or 100 banks, whoever chooses to bid on it, they'll pick the lowest bidder more likely than not.
Okay. Any other further questions? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We have a amendment here, an A5 amendment that moves to delete Representative Eastland, page 14, line 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This deals with the Common Course numbering issue that's kind of been on the table for a few years. And I just looked at this bill, and I saw there's a piece in there that I don't understand why it's there. I don't think there's anything currently in law that puts any kind of a time frame on when Common Course numbering is supposed to happen. Is there? Am I mistaken on that?
No. Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beasley, no, you're correct.
And so I guess my point is I don't know why we need to put something in law that is going to delay something that doesn't even have a deadline already. So I would just be more comfortable to take this language out. It seems like if we're going to delay the Common Course numbering system until some things start to happen, the way that works around here, dates change and reports time change, and I just think I'd be more comfortable with this piece out. And I don't think it really changes anything that's going to actually happen. And if any of the student organizations would like to speak to this, I guess this is just kind of a thought that I had.
Any other student? This was a request by them, and I believe maybe IFO had some. So come on up, guys, and tell me if you. I don't see why Representative Eastland can't be accommodated on his last amendment.
Could I get a copy of it? Mr. Chair, from what, for the record, Jason Fossum with the Minnesota State College Student Association, we have no problem with seeing that come out. We want to have a broad-based discussion about transfer and how to fix the transfer system. I know that this is language from Representative Poppy's bill, and we've spoken with her about it, and we just want to see a broad-based discussion around transfer and how to fix it. And so we'd be more than happy to have this piece come out so that we could have that full discussion without anything sort of holding back any part of the discussion.
I'm Graham Allen with the Minnesota State University Student Association. I guess we would kind of agree. I think at this point with the transfer process, we kind of want to move ahead and look at all the different options, and wouldn't, since it's not, we may not support any kind of Common Course numbering in the end, but I don't think we want to eliminate something without having discussed it first. So I guess we would support the amendment.
Okay. Heard the discussion. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly respect Representative Eastland's perspective on this as well as the students. However, I guess the reason why it's in here is not to diminish the possibility for discussion, and maybe, you know, maybe there's some words that need to be changed or eliminated from that, if that's the case. But I really do think I'm concerned about just having a Common Course numbering system as being the answer to some of our transfer issues. And I do not believe that a Common Course numbering system solves the problem. So the issue for me was just to be able to say that if we can have the discussion, it may include whether or not Common Course numbering is a good idea or not a good idea, but to kind of push it off and to make sure that we have done some study before we actually would have a voluntary or mandatory course numbering system proposed. So I would oppose the amendment.
Representative Eastland.
Yeah, I understand that, and I think with this language out, it actually does provide that opportunity. I think you hear what the students are saying. I think the legislature hasn't put anything in law that says it has to be done by a certain time, and I think to put this in there actually puts a hammer kind of on the side of MISCU to drag their feet in getting this process underway. So I just think all the pieces are in place, and let's not put some artificial lever in there that somebody can take advantage of, and just simply say let's have the discussion and let's move ahead and make a decision based on the discussion. And I think, but this language out of there, it clearly opens that playing field.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to support Representative Poppy on our opposition to removing this language, primarily because of discussions I've had with faculty at Minnesota State Mankato, and I think they would enter into the transfer discussion with a much more open approach if this language remains in the bill.
Any other folks weighing into it? If not, all those in, Mr. Stanton, you want to come down and then would you send a welcome? Just identify.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just very, very briefly, because these Common Core things can turn into hour-long discussions. support Representative Poppy and Representative Reinert's positions. I do think, you know, we'd like to enter into this with a as an open discussion with everything on the table, and we shouldn't have it precluded by one method of solving this problem. So I think everybody's committed to trying to solve the problem. We've made a lot of progress, and we'd like to keep the language as it is. Thank you.
Okay. You've heard the discussion then, which I'm really not a little puzzled by, but I'm going to give you a vote here. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That was a close one. Division. All those in favor, raise your hands. Oh, son of a gun. Okay. Opposed? The motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Members, then we have the, if there's no further amendments, you know, members, you know, I was thinking this morning about the health care plan passed out in Washington the other night, and whether you agree with it or not, and I do with most of it, I'm wondering if it's going to open up a lot of opportunities, having that many more people that are going to, at least pre-existing conditions and whatever, and the bill kicking in starting this summer, if we're going to have an opportunity to educate more people. We need nurses and that, but there's going to be no more, you know, healthcare folks involved. And I just hope that our MNSCU systems and our state grant program and the university is able to maybe jump on that and get into some programs and opportunities to educate some people that are going to be needed because of that. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a little bit of an offshoot from what you're talking about, but I sometimes see people who come to college, who are young people who come to college, not quite ready to be students, but they're doing that because they want to stay on their parents' insurance, and I think that's going to be a huge change to be able to allow students and parents to then make better decisions on whether or not their children should be students, and should they be full-time or part-time students, and you know, can they get into the workforce, and all of those things. I think it really helps us with our beyond teenage students, but yet not quite yet adult, children. So I think that's also going to be helpful.
Right. Okay, members, we have then the House File 3495, DE3 amendment as amended in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Members, thank you. And then we have Chancellor Martin from UMD, who's come down to talk to us. Yeah. The Chancellor has done a wonderful job in Duluth, and she is retiring, and she wants to talk to us just a little bit about her thoughts. Is it 12 years, Catherine? I can't remember. 15. Oh, my God, time flies. I remember when you were just a young new Chancellor, fresh from I don't know where, but taking over for Ianni. So, welcome to the committee. We're going to have, you know, the university in front of us with their report, hopefully, if we ever get time to do it.
April 6th.
But Ms. Martin couldn't be here, so I want her just welcome to the committee and tell us your thoughts on what's happening at UMD and what is happening to the system and any other thoughts you might have for us. Welcome.
Chair Rukavina, members of the committee, thank you for the invitation to come today. And congratulations, Tom, on your daughter's upcoming wedding. That's great. She was a fine student in the MAPL program.
Thank you. And she's a Democrat, I think, but I'm not sure. But she's not invited either, Rob, so.
No. I would also like to comment to you all on the fact that our women's hockey team just won the 5th national championship. Thank you. It's a fairly outstanding record. They have won 50% of the Division I NCAA national championships. That's a pretty amazing record. But I'm pleased to speak to you this morning on some of the impact of the upcoming budget challenges that will be faced specifically by the University of Minnesota Duluth. And I'm confident that President Brunix and the other chancellors will have equally difficult series of comments to make to you. As you are already aware, we have retrenched $11 million from the budget of the University of Minnesota Duluth. I comment about that because we were fortunate the first time we went through this significant a reduction that we had 80 retirements that we didn't fill behind and had only 2 layoffs. Our faculty and staff have had a pay freeze for the current year, and for the next year are likely to have furloughs and or salary reductions. I'm just going to give you this overview and then indicate what we perceive to be some of the upcoming consequences and impacts on our academic strategies. Our tuition has gone up 7.5% for each of the last 2 years, but with budget stimulus money, we have been able to keep that at 4.4%. However, at the end of this biennium, and with the loss of stimulus dollars, our tuition will jump to 7.5%. We have been working with President Brunix in an effort to try and have the tuition at UMD, Crookston, and Morris below the level of tuition on the Twin City campus. To date, we have not been able to achieve that particular goal, but we believe that tuition should be lower on the coordinate campuses than it is on the Twin City campuses. This large tuition increase in the next biennium is going to significantly and harmfully impact the number of Minnesota students who are going to be able to go to college. It's just simply going to make it impossible for many Minnesota high school students to go on to college. We have worked at UMD over the past 15 years to raise the amount of money to increase significantly the funding that we have available for financial aid. We have over 75 endowed scholarships now that are available to incoming students. We have a variety of other privately funded scholarships to assist with financial aid. But the scholarship dollars don't necessarily go up at the rate of tuition. And so on an annual basis, tuition scholarships and funded scholarships are paying a smaller percentage of the tuition of the incoming student. That's going to have a drastic impact on students at UMD. Right now, 85% of them work. Some of them have 2 and 3 jobs, not just 1 job, and 90% of them are on some kind of work study or financial aid. As tuition increases, I fear that this may create a secondary retrenchment, because for every reduction of 100 students, we lose $1.5 million in tuition, student fees, housing, etc. So the reduction of 100 students or 200 students is going to cause another sense of retrenchment on the campus as we go through the projected second round of $11 million reduction. As I mentioned, this year we reduced 82 faculty and staff positions based on retirements with 2 layoffs. It now appears that the additional cuts that will be necessary are similar to what happened the past 2 years, and we will then begin to go down into programmatic reductions. We have reduced one area of advisement by $50,000. That will go down another 100. However, I would hasten to comment that this was a central entity, and now the collegiate units themselves all have advising offices. So by retrenching in that area, we are not reducing the advising available to students. In fact, last year, our first to second year retention was 80%. Our second to third year retention was 70% up 5% from the previous year. So we are working very, very hard at retention strategies that I think have been quite successful. We have a uniform plan across the campus for assessment of learning outcomes, which is also extremely important, and I would hate to see that negatively impact as we go forward. I would also like to point out that as we look to the future, we are looking to the development of additional courses online. That's very important both for the students on the campus who are working, but also for students off campus who are continuing their degrees. That has been very, very successful with our cohort groups and our master's programs in education and also our EDD, where we have a large number of students in the cohort from the tribal colleges and from the reservation elementary and secondary schools. So we're looking at using some of that online application of learning to the general student as well as to the special students in our graduate programs. If we need to reduce another 80 staff members, if that happens, and we are reducing that number of faculty and staff, we're going to be in a position of not being able to offer the courses necessary for students to graduate in a timely fashion. We can reduce some programs, we can merge some programs, we can make significant adjustments with our Teamster employees, with our AFSCME employees, with our civil service employees, and with our faculty, who I would remind you all are also UEA members. However, what is going to happen then is that the majors that we are able to offer, the numbers of students we are able to accept, are going to be reduced, irrespective of any efforts we make or any number of dollars that we are able to raise. I would conclude by saying that we are working hard at reducing low enrollment majors, that we are temporarily closing down some programs until we see whether or not enrollment becomes cyclical and increases again. We are working across the campus to determine how we might merge programs and save on some administrative costs. I would, however, point out that if you look, as most of us in higher education do, at the U.S. News and World Report each August, the University of Minnesota Duluth is singled out on an annual basis for the fact that we have the lowest administrative costs per student of any university. And that's both a plus and a minus to the quality of what we do on the campus. Not having as many administrators as students need to have support services is not good. On the other hand, I'm very proud of the fact that our administration has not grown at UMD in the last 15 to 20 years. I can speak specifically to the 15 years I have been there. We have carefully guarded the number of administrators and worked around that and have added over 100 faculty as our enrollment has gone from 7,500 to over 11,000. We will do the best we can, however you know, and I think you understand, that at another $11 million of cuts will reduce faculty, staff, majors, programs, and create a very different university than what we have worked to achieve in the last many years. I thank you for the work you do on behalf of higher education and for the opportunity to be here today, and for the support you have provided me, especially you, Chairman Rukavina. Thank you.
Chancellor, thank you very much for the job you've done. You've done an excellent job for the University of Minnesota, University of Minnesota Duluth, and we're going to miss you. Representative Nornes, you go ahead first, and then I have a few questions.
Okay, just had a quick comment. Or a thank you, first of all, for your service. And I wanted to tell you that I'm sorry to see you leaving. My granddaughter is enrolling there this fall. So she won't get to know you. That's what someone will be there, I guess, in your place, maybe.
And I don't know if she can be replaced.
My granddaughter was very, very, I mean, headstrong about going to your college. I don't know why, but she's, I wanted her to stay in Fergus Falls at the community college, but now she's coming to Duluth. So
I
just wanted you to know that.
I think she's looking for a good range kid, and that's what I think. So, Catherine,
thank you very much.
How do you lay off 80 people? And I'm assuming those retirements retired them, and you didn't fill their positions and laid off two more. And how do you do that? And I'm assuming you did it across the board with janitors and secretaries and instructors. But let's focus on the instructors and then the people that, the secretaries and that help them with their instruction and classroom needs. How do you do that without hurting the educational experience up there?
Chair Rukavina, the answer is very simple. You can't do it. You can't do it without some negative impact on the programs. We have people teaching some additional classes. One time around, we could do it because we had people agree to teach more. We had people agree to spread out their teaching assignments over the semesters and into the summer. And we were very innovative at the department and collegiate unit level. To do that a second time would be impossible. We can't ask people to go beyond what's a reasonable course load. Currently, we're doing okay. We have the most drastic impact has been on the increase in size in some of the classes, and I disdain it enormously. But we had no choice.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry to see Representative Nornes go. I was going to, you know, the answer to his question, it was simple. One campus is in Fergus Falls and the other is in Duluth. I mean, who wouldn't make that choice? But I do want to take a moment to publicly thank Chancellor Martin for all of the work at UMD. You know, it's a campus that's grown significantly, yet has kept costs under control. But, I mean, Chancellor Martin, as we all know, having served on this committee, just has a clear vision for what that campus was going to be. And I'm not sure even the community had that vision until she brought them along. So it's been an interesting leadership to see. And of course, we're also losing President Kathy Nelson, who is the president of Lake Superior College this summer. So in our local higher ed community, we're a bit concerned that we're losing two stalwart leaders locally. And you know, I just want to point out at this point, I'm disappointed we don't have any Republican members left to have this conversation, because I think we have a veteran who has a proven leadership track record, giving us some parting wisdom that we are going to have to take and going to have to be serious about in the next session. I mean, as Chancellor Martin points out, we have huge choices to make, and it's not just one party or one side of this committee that can do it. So it is really disappointing that I look across at a half-empty table.
They probably had a caucus before we go into session, so we can't blame them. Chancellor, one last question, and that is for the new 80 that you might have to lay off, and especially when you brought on some new programs now in engineering and other programs that I admit you've been very innovative in, what happens to those new programs, and what do you cut, like Mankato and St. Cloud and others are proposing? What do you cut and what happens to your new programs?
Well, first of all, we work with our Chair Rukavina, members of the committee. First of all, we would work with the deans and the deans with their department heads to look across all of the programs and to attempt to prioritize where we might have the least impact. I'm not sure right now there's a least impact. I think we would have to look to see what kind of retirement packages we could put together and where we could maintain the strength of the required courses and the prerequisites in order to guarantee students the courses they need in the appropriate sequence to get through in 4.5 or 5 years. The majority of our students graduate in 5 years because they work two or three jobs, so they can't make it in 4 years. On the other hand, we probably will have to suspend some of the majors for a couple of years. I can't tell you which ones, and have to merge. And it's just going to be an extraordinarily difficult situation. We won't be able to offer all of the majors we're offering now. In areas like engineering, there's a limited number of faculty that we could reduce. We could, this is absolute and pure conjecture, which is dangerous. I imagine that we will be doing more teaching with part-time and term faculty rather than permanent faculty. I don't know how else to solve the predicament if it's up again at 80.
Well, Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the Chancellor, could you give me an idea of what the class sizes are increasing to and what the class sizes were at in classes?
Chair Rukavina, members of the committee, we tried to never have course sizes over 35 or 40, and they're up to 60 and 65. In lecture classes with student assistants doing discussion groups and faculty members being available for discussion online and taking advantage of everything we can technologically, but the sizes, I just don't think that's the best kind of educational experience that our students should have. We have prided ourselves over the years. When we could have become more selective because of demand, we have chosen to continue to take students that were in the top 25% of their class instead of saying we're only going to take students that are in the top 10 or 15%, because we believe that students throughout northern Minnesota and all of Minnesota deserved an opportunity to go to college if they had that desire and they were able to turn around their academic records. And large numbers of those students have been extraordinarily successful. But my concern, and a concern that I'll leave with my successor, is that as you have to reduce the numbers of students that you're able to take into a university, your first inclination is to only take the very best students. And I have a concern about these students that otherwise would have come to the University of Minnesota Duluth and ultimately graduated because of our support services and because of our concern about our students, that no longer will be able to get in if we have to restrict the size of our classes as we go forward. That's a major concern of mine. Land-grant universities are supposed to make education accessible, not inaccessible. And I worry that we're going to become less and less accessible because of cost and because of the reductions in numbers that we've had to make in our faculty and staff.
Chancellor, let's all stand up and give a great lady from a great city next to a great lake a round of applause. Huh? Thank you for your service. For a decade and a half. Members, with that, meeting is adjourned.